flames through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush. Do you remember 36? We went our separate ways. You fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom. You believe in authority, I believe in myself. I'm a Molotov cocktail, you don't pairing your baby. What's that? Confused like you.
My name's Gwayne Williams. Welcome to the Circle Day. This is on Resonance 104.4 FM, I think. Something traumatic happened in my life. I joined up with a cult. It was a fantastic cult. It's one of the best I've ever been a member of. I've been a member of a few, but this one was really quite funny. It happened a few years ago. I moved back down to London. I was stone broke, on my mum's sofa, pissed off, alienated from any wealth, housing, a sense of justice. I was just angry. I was sickened by the New Labour, the SWP, Stop the War Coalition, middle class liberalist failures, droning on about marching around doing nothing with their whole lives. So I went down to the London Anarchist Book Fair. And oh God, what a pile of crap. Nothing was offered. Veganism or hissy fits about Russian history. I left disgusted, dismantled politically, again set out just to go around, ignoring all the madness around me. But then a massive glossy poster was handed over to me, an invite to a formation of an organisation called the Whitechapel Anarchist Group. I read it through, and on the back, the term class struggle by instinct. Ah, it was perfection. No nonsense, no baggage. I went to the first meeting. I just fell in utter, head over heels, love. There were smiles in the room, crowds grinning. No one mentioned Russia. Straight off, this geezer, he was laying on the floor, like pen in hand, planning out the first paper. I wrote an article. A few weeks later, we're handing it out on the streets, straight onto the streets. An angry, half-serious, half-humour, street-based rag. A cross between class war and the ranters. Like, pure sex appeal. Throughout this time, there was one man who was my boss. A twisted genius. A vengeful, angry, barbaric boffin. A cursed individual indeed. Greg Hall, filmmaker. You join me here tonight.
Thank you. I'm grinning from cheek to cheek. That was a beautiful intro. Thank you.
I said I'd give you a run-in.
Yeah, no, that was great. I wasn't expecting that. That was very passionate and, yeah, lovely.
It's a passionate topic. One of my great loves in life.
But it's good to be back here talking to you about it.
Yeah.
So, do you want me to kick off with how it formed and give...
Well, I joined after the book fair at what I always assume was the first meeting. But obviously, you must have met up before to knock out the first introduction.
Yeah, I mean, when you came across that would be October 2008. I mean, really, like, personally, myself, there was only, like, a handful of us that kind of got that together. I kind of, you mentioned, like, the Stop the War stuff there. Like, that was something that really politicised myself. I hadn't been involved in activist politics, really. I felt quite alienated from it. As a filmmaker, I'd come across Ian Bone's book, Bash the Rich, which blew my mind because it was hilarious. Everything about his old Alarm paper, about the class war paper, covering everything from the 80s. So I'd been in touch with Ian. I'd met up with people like Martin Wright and kind of was discovering that old strand of class war and was kind of wanting to get more politically involved, but nothing was going on. And then Martin and Ian invited me to this meeting at Ramparts, which was a big squat in East London. And there'd been a meeting called by all different groups from the kind of London anarchist scene. So from like ex-Wombles to Antifa to Haringey Solidarity Group to ex-Class War, as a meeting to try and pull something together. So I went along to that, and that was one of the first kind of meetings I'd ever been to. And really it was out of that, like hearing all the arguments from groups like HSG about local organising, then hearing some of like the class war people and people like some of the ex-Wombles who were talking about having something that was more kind of overtly anarchist out there, that some of us, like literally four or five of us, got an idea to get the WAG paper together, which, like you said, was a big glossy invite. I think we did 2,000 copies and we distributed them in October. We did it locally on Brick Lane, and knowing that at the end of the month was the Anarchist Book Fair, which again was locally in Mile End. And really, we were based around LARC, the London Action Resource Centre. So out of that, we were all big, book fans and history fans because we were running a library. So all of those things went into kind of making WAG the kind of brand it was just before that first meeting of being like anarchist politics, class war politics, bit of that bash the rich kind of humour, nicely designed, and that kind of idea of English history and kind of English identity.
Straight off, we were all really into our history. We were all into the Peasants' Revolt, like the Civil War, the times that specifically we weren't, you know, you'd read stuff and things like that, like the Makhnovist movement in Ukraine was appealing. Like, you know, like the guy was brilliant, he'd shoot anyone, like, you know, a real kind of lead from the front, like with a gun, kind of madness that really appealed to us. Like, but we're all really into our history. And in our, all the papers, it really appealed to it. And I think with a lot of our imagery, the first cover we took from The Blast, like paper from like, you know, 1916 or something, and we just whacked on it, bank balance, under people being hung by the weight of a fat banker. And we just put that on the street, and I felt a glowing pride with that. This massive poster, and it just chimed with exactly the sentiment at the time. We were only a small group. It was only like 3,000, maybe even less papers that we did of that.
Yeah, like, yeah, 3,000.
But it just like instantly,
run.
We just got rid of them so quickly that we had the energy to go into a second paper, which was more, we realised that what we got rid of was the front cover, the anti-banking. We hit it the exact spot on time, the anti-banking propaganda. When we came out the second paper, Basher Banker with a kid on, with a baseball bat over his hand.
Batman.
Like, taken from Batman. And inside it was just full of great bits of stolen work and things like this. And all the articles we wrote ourselves, just really angry, just really targeted, like, you know, I mean, the banks were literally just raiding all our money. They were in collapse and getting us to pay for it. Like, and it felt like it was mad to not be angry about that. It felt a bit more like a time now when you go out to the streets and say, the bankers have nicked every single thing we own. They've taken it all. The rich have just taken everything. They're stripping back everything. They're stealing everything we've got. Social housing, transport, like union rights, pensions, everything. They're just absorbing all of our class's wealth. People just go, oh, yeah, you know. Yeah, well,
it's kind of on mainstream now, that kind of argument. I mean, you bring up two good things. I think the paper was like, we were kind of a paper group. So even that first meeting that you came to in October, from that meeting, like you said, we decided to do a paper that we're then handing out a month later. Then it was doing paper number two. So everything was about writing a paper, reflecting on everything around us, putting it together, then handing it out on the streets. And yeah, this was the time of like what was called the credit crunch before the recession. So we were there kind of...
title of our third paper.
Yeah, we were filling a void that, you know, because of the, I suppose, inactivity of other groups of what had gone on previously, we were filling that void.
Well, we were only supposed to be a little local group. I think a part of it, all of our politics kind of got grounded a bit because we tried to tie it to the local area. Mm. Every blog you write, everything you put out, you link it to the local area. Tower Hamlets being an area of one of the poorest places in the entire country. Like, you know, I think there's only a few places in Liverpool and parts of Hackney that rival Tower Hamlets for its levels of poverty within this country. Like, and on the other side, extreme psychotic wealth. I mean, it's quite easy to tie world events to the local area, and I thought that was quite important. It's like, the reason we hate the rich is because of this person on this street. The reason we're against gentrification is because there's a market trader flipping over the independent space down on Brick Lane and they're replacing it with cupcake stalls. Like, it was great. It's just a shame there wasn't more groups like that.
I mean, it was weird though, because Whitechapel itself, I mean, maybe like some mystics would believe, like Alan Moore believed, like there's maybe a ley line running through Whitechapel, because it did feel like it was the beating heart of all world politics. If there was a bombing in Gaza, everyone locally was talking about it and getting like the local Tesco's getting smashed up. If it was about the banks, well, RBS was on the corner of Whitechapel High Street. If it was about gentrification, it's like the slums are this side, the city's that side. So it was like, it felt like all world events resonated definitely in Whitechapel. And I think as like talking as anarchists, like the London Action Resource Centre was there, which again was something that used to be an anarchist school 100 years previously. It'd been set up by Reclaim the Streets in the 90s. We also had Freedom Bookshop round the corner, one of the oldest kind of anarchist papers. Then the Rampart Squat round the corner, which was like a social centre with that kind of, I suppose, European feel to activism. So it really felt that everything was going, like this microcosm of Whitechapel was like the wider anarchist and activist, or just an entire political world in some sense.
And the attention we got as well, like thinking back about it, some of the more bizarre attention, the level of attention the police gave us. We were a little few people, never more than 30, to be honest, normally around 5 people, handing out a fairly intense local paper. And yeah, we had a lot of great conversations. We got a lot of resonance with people. Mm. But the police stalked us madly. Like, they were everywhere. The fit lot were all the time just like, you know, constantly photographing you all the time and following you on demonstrations and things like that. And that kind of justified our behaviour a little bit. We thought, like, yeah, we actually are saying something revolutionary and dangerous. And the Daily Mail, like, pretending to infiltrate us, doing a bit of a hatchet job on us, like an expose, like in our war den. Well, the little community centre on Philgate Street, the war den, you're having a laugh. Like, talking about, like, grinning thugs ready to cause trouble. And, of course, with the Daily Mail doing the infiltration, it was part of that seditious thing of trying to make up stuff about protesters. Like, you know, some of the protests were beginning to happen. It was a build-up to the G20. Like, you know, we had that nasty article put out about us, which was a complete lie, and a complete cover for the only thugs of that day, which is the Metropolitan Police, that went on to kettle people, beat people. They beat the hell out of people up on Liverpool Street. Yeah. They smashed in those, like, little hippies' heads. Like, they gave him a real kick in, and they murdered a man down on by a bank. Like, you know.
It was crazy times. I mean, it was one of those times where, you know, like, the media lies and twists things. But I remember after the G20, and we'd only been going for 6 months as a group, and reading this double-page spread where this guy had claimed to infiltrate us for months, and it's like, he was a journalist, he turned up to a public meeting, everyone clocked he was a journalist, so the person leading the meeting kind of, you know, basically, because Chris Knight, who was from the G20 Meltdown, had all this media attention around him, we'd kind of joked that, oh, we've just got orders from our leader, Chris Knight, that this journalist took everything hook, line and sinker, completely fabricated, like, that he was with us at the G20, throwing bricks and chairs. There's no images of any bricks or chairs being thrown in.
He could barely pick up a brick.
Yeah, it was that, just that level of lies. And I guess because we had produced that Storm the Banks poster, and before that the WAG paper 2, which was Bash a Banker, in the lead up to the G20, which we're talking, like, you know, in 2009 April. Because I remember reading a Evening Standard a week or two before the G20, and it was pointing to all the groups that organised it. It said Reclaim the Streets, who were no longer existent. It said the Wombles, who also were no longer existent, and Class War, which was effectively not really going, was just a paper.
One person paper as well.
Yeah, and then the Whitechapel Anarchist group. Yeah. So basically, we were the only people around.
We answered the phone. We were the only people to pick up. The phone was ringing. There
right
was an event
time,
happening.
Right place. Yeah.
And we were never afraid to talk to journalism. Borderline caught them, to be honest, sometimes.
Became part, I suppose, even the fact we produced lots of propaganda, we knew about that idea of, I don't want to get all kind of pointy head, but the idea of, like, society is a spectacle, and how we communicate and how we create identity through imagery, through the language we use. So very much like playing the media along, it became part of who we were as a group.
And we knew what you could say and what you couldn't say. And some of the things felt really nice to say as well. Like talking about, like, later on, just like student rights and stuff, and actually being able to look at things honestly and change. Like, look, this is young people engaging in politics. Like, it felt like we were, talking a bit of sense every now and again. And we just wanted to engage with as many people as possible. We knew the media would be a way to communicate with people.
You knew how to play it as well.
I don't understand why so much supposed politics is against outreach. It's against trying to meet anyone.
Yeah.
Loads of people read the Evening Standard. Like, you know, loads of people read the Mail. I actually thought the Mail article, even though it was a ratchet job, was quite nice.
I mean, to be honest, that's
we did
how,
the Independent, didn't
we?
Yeah,
we did we really did kind of whore ourselves out to the media. Yeah. But, I mean, I've read about, when I was growing up during the anti-war stuff about the Wombles. And all that about them being like all these nutters who dressed up in white in like the papers. And I was like, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to people that grew up and came across Class War in the 80s. It was like the same thing. You'd see it in the paper, like these crazed anarchists smashing stuff up. They'd be like, that's wicked. I want to get involved in that.
I always grew up with a deep suspicion of the papers, and that basically anyone they were slagging off was kind of worth supporting.
You knew it was lies.
Especially as well, it's like my mum would be reading the Daily Mail and she'd say something about what's happening in Ireland, and my dad would just be, it's all lies, everything the Daily Mail says about Ireland, it's lies. And it's like, you just take them like, so these people, they're kind of all right. Daily Mail is always against them. Like,
I guess getting infiltrated by the Daily Mail and being attacked by all the papers was like a badge of honour.
I saw a mate who had one of those hated by the Daily Mail
badges.
And I hadn't realised they were a thing yet. And I was like, oh, what have you done? Like, and I was like, I actually thought it went like, it's because the Daily Mail have actually slagged you off. You could wear that badge. But no, everyone wears it.
We were described as a bizarre group of misfits, which we then put on the front of our paper. And it was kind of like, we always described ourselves as that.
Well, it took into the kind of appeal with things like the Fifth Monarchists and things. These people, like the ranters, like the mad and the unhinged on the side, they're actually, somehow actually have a bit of a voice. Like,
And even like, we, like, again, coming back to history, things like pirates and stuff like that. We were all obsessed with history. And
well, that's what politics was. It was an angry mob, like, basically being like, attack the rich on the streets, organise by that way, be nice to your neighbour and things. We weren't reading philosophy. We weren't reading like Bukharin and Kropotkin, these boring, dead anarchist writers that just go on and on and on. Instead, we were interested in just looking around. It's like, you know, whatever the people like from 100 years ago, their politics, the one thing they definitely weren't doing was spending all their time writing books about people from hundreds of years ago. They were writing about the politics around them at the time. They were engaging with it. Like, you know.
I mean, I do remember the first, actually, the first paper we produced. What the interesting thing about the paper was doing was on the back we advertised a social event. So we would always produce a paper with a social event, and that was obviously the Radical History Pub Crawl, which always seemed like great ideas in planning. And then when you turned up at the first pub at five, the idea of like what was to commence was pretty grueling. And we did quite a few of them where we'd go round East London and cover everything from like the Battle of Cable Street to the NF being kicked off Brick Lane to the execution of King Charles I to Sydney Street, while going to pubs with a mob of 30, 40 people.
And it would kind of go up and wave, and kind of like people would turn up and things, and you'd just be on the streets with a load of drunks, really. And we all thought it was brilliant.
Lots of drinking and lots of history was basically probably what came down.
And this was the point where they got chased down the street. Like, you know, his body is buried at this crossroads. Like, the fascists try to walk down this street. Every street as well with it in Whitechapel. You feel absorbed in it. The area has so much character in it.
Completely.
Like, the fog comes in. Like, you know, you hear the call to prayer going off. You look into the distance and there's Canary Wolf glaring at you. Like, you know, everything in Whitechapel, it felt... Well, I intended to start up the Lewisham anarchist group. I was living down in Lewisham. I was going to start off stuff there. But instead, I ended up moving up to Whitechapel and everyone kind of got sucked into the area.
Yeah, right? I mean, and again, the history thing led us to what we did next, which was the Spitalfields Fair. Like, after the G20, the complete opposite of the idea of us organising, like, a local fair, which was, I think there was, like, a line or two in, like, the East End Chronicles book, which we'd all kind of obsessed over, and about the old Spitalfields Fair being,
did
like,
it
this
actually
old...
exist? I remember at one point we found out it didn't exist.
Yeah, there's debate about whether it does, but we put it on.
But that's history. History's made up anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Like... Partly for us, it was just off Brick Lane, so it was very much about, because we built up quite a relationship with a lot of the illegal market, some of the spotters from like the selling of stolen bikes, people from the Doss House, the drunks. We'd built up a quite like this underclass on Brick Lane, this relationship, and we decided to then hold the Spitalfields Fair on a field just off Brick Lane, which was very much just about combating things like gentrification.
Some of the local market
traders
actually turned up.
Yeah,
like, and it meant the
yeah.
actual market inspectors who were closing down all independent stalls, like things. And the place then as well, you'd go up, there's a person with a bit of Mac on the floor, selling just belts, secondhand boots and stuff.
Yeah.
Really useful if you need the stuff, like, and things. And they were just smashing that away to bring in cupcakes. And a lot of those people, a few of them actually turned up and did stalls there because there was different legal grounds. Like, you know, so there were three of the market inspectors. Didn't sell a thing all day.
No,
the local kids came and things like that, and they beat the hell out of us at five-a-side football.
Yeah.
They won a crate of lager.
Destroyed everyone, like, yeah.
I remember I was in Goa, I could barely breathe after 3 minutes. And that was our reward, though. We'd been involved in such, like, the G20 running around over this, like, political stuff. It's almost like we wanted to try a bit of the RTS, the public event. Yeah, we were doing it in the historical spectacle, but we also wanted to maybe be a little bit like, you know, AFA in the 80s with the Hackney carnivals and things like this, or like Haringey, like, you know, with the kind of little quirky events they do. But it kind of felt that was a bit of our reward. Let's have a play around locally. We don't have to deal with the police. We're doing something good and fun.
Yeah,
it was exhausting as well.
Yeah, like, yeah, it was a lot of work. Again, the paper fed into that. We produced like 5,000 papers, which advertised
that
fair.
Yeah,
it was a struggle. It was a lot of work for everyone involved. But the thing about WAG was it was a group of people, like friends that have bonded and people that work together. I always thought it was really pretentious calling people comrades when I first got into politics. But I would say during that period, like some of the people, definitely a lot of the people that I was involved in, whether it was doing a fair to distributing a paper, or whatever, was I considered them a comrade. Like, you know, we we agreed on something, believed
in
something.
Trusted, like, yeah, yeah. And things like that. It's like you could have a slight disagreement in a meeting, but as soon as you're out on the street together, that person's got your back. And as well, if that person says kettle forming, you look at the size, you see the police moving, you listen to them. Like, you know as well that it's one of the few times I knew if I got nicked on the street at all for anything, there'd be a person waiting outside the station, or maybe at least in the pub. Like, you know. But it was good. Like, I remember times being on Brick Lane and it's like the police would come up hassling you because you're mouthing off. I always used to like the paper handing out itself. I felt like almost that was our public display.
Yeah,
that was
definitely.
That stopped a lot of ability for people to flack us because we were trying to engage with our community so hard, putting out the most radical politics we could come up with. And yeah, we were having a laugh, but we believed bits of it as well kind of all coming in. And yeah, when the police would just kind of start hassling you and you just start, like, you're mouthing off kind of going, go on, get the paper that the Metropolitan Police are trying to ban right now in front of you. Look at them, the paper they are trying to ban on the streets
what
right now.
What they don't want you to read, yeah.
And you just start flying them out, the paper just starts going out like mad. And you just, like, that ability to even work that. Coppers come up trying to shut down your little paper giveaway. And, like, you know, what happens? You're with such a good group of people, so close together and able to manipulate, that none of you get nicked. And instead you get rid of, like, 300 extra papers in 5 minutes. Like,
I mean, that was one of the biggest things for me about WAG, was about distributing a paper on a street level in a market kind of almost weekly, feeling part of that market, and but also standing there and being able to have spiel and talk to people and have banter and be able to argue politics with people on a street level and learn those things about oration, where you need things like humour, you need to be populist, you need to really resonate with people. And it was things like coming back to, like, you know, Ian Bones bash the rich, people like Martin Wright, people like Pete Gold that we met along the way from the Whopping strikes, some of those old school kind of street orators. And I used to love that, again, looking through history back in time to when you would, you know, you used to have those rallies where you had hundreds of people and people would have to get up and either, you know, convince people of their argument or not. And that, for me, being on the street, handing something out and debating with people, that was the best thing about politics. Yeah, like, on the streets.
I think at times when we lulled from doing papers, like, you know, I started squatting, which I think removes you from a lot. And it's almost like when we weren't doing papers, when we weren't on the street directly connecting with people, having to defend our ideas as well.
Yes,
like, if you're
going
to say something,
yeah,
like, people would come up to me, open up the paper, they'd read about, like, proper class warfare, they'd read about doing this, like, you know, quite right, some good stuff, and they'd sit there and read it in front of me. And, you know, you could tell if they didn't like it, they were going to give you a slap or at least bend your ear, like, you know, for a time and things like that. And it never came. People were always like, oh, all right, that's good. People would give us money on the streets. I got given a tenner once for matches. Like, once on the coming up to the election, like when we did the anti-election paper, my favourite paper, like, yeah, you know, the paper which had a free match sellotape to every front cover so you could burn your ballot with it, a gift from the anarchist, very Beano-like. I was running on about how Gordon Brown will be executed by the Whitechapel anarchist group. You know, a couple of kids came up. They took me aside and they're like, do you want to buy a gun? I was like, I didn't want to tell him. Like, I didn't want to seem like I was uncool and I wasn't actually going to shoot the Prime Minister. So I was like, no, it's okay. We're all right, actually, thanks. It's like, yeah, they were dead straight. They weren't having a wind on the things. They were like just two kids from the area and they were like, oh, you're doing this? Cool.
I mean, we did always use the joke because WAG was such quite a dramatic, close-knit group of friends, or a bizarre group of misfits. We used to describe it in seasons.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, season one, I suppose, was up until the end of the Spitalfields Fair, and then season two was in 2010, which was the May elections. And I think the best thing we ever produced was that paper, where it had a very clear... It's almost like we had an anti-election campaign, which was branded just even better than the political parties brand their campaigns. We had a gun target around all the main candidates,
fantastic,
and Nick Griffin from the BNP. But on the gun thing was like the WAG letters. And then inside the paper, it was, we'd broken down everything from housing to immigration to revolution to healthcare. And we, in 200 words, we put forward our arguments. And yeah, we had the matches on the front, which I remember people sticking down 6,000 matches and
that was so
being
long.
Paranoid paranoid that their fingerprints would be on the sellotape.
I saw it was like the ultimate anarchist fresher bar stuck on the front of your Beano. Like, you know.
It was just that, but distributing those papers at that time, and it was a big learning thing for us, I think, because it's easy to go out on the street and say all politicians are corrupt, the banks are stealing from us, and the police are really killing us. And people go, yeah, I agree with you, but what is the alternative?
Yeah.
And it's that question, what is the alternative, that a lot of the times anarchists, like that's where anarchism falls into the media perception of it, of being angry, throwing a bomb, or, you know, there's elements that are truth, that, yeah, it is partly about being angry and confrontational, but there's a massive side to anarchism, which is actually about an alternative.
Yeah.
And that's not what we ever really articulate so much. But us as a group, we evolved that first year of finding our feet, being infiltrated by the Daily Mail, suddenly being projected as the main anarchist group in the whole of the UK, a role we didn't want to fill.
It was well difficult because in many ways there was times our politics fluctuated a lot.
Yeah,
but we
completely.
Also had a variety of people in it, from like Leninists, like, yeah, you know, to left, yeah, communists, to people that wouldn't describe themselves as anarchists, some people that were just angry and around at a time,
yeah,
and things like that. Like, I think it's interesting, I'm not sure, we never really were able to properly say what we were for, except massive change, and that there was one way we thought we needed to get it. Like, I think that meant we were kind of open for a lot of people, made more sense. And it's kind of strange seeing anarchism as it is just not, like, it doesn't seem appealing. Like, it's not handing out, like, even a desire to change the world. It's just become in on itself, judging itself and things, like a lot of politics have. It's just become cynical. There doesn't seem actually a space for a form of politics which is about moving forward in society anywhere that isn't utterly stale and corrupt, whether it's through unions, whether it's through elections, Labour parties, all parts of civic society just feel fairly corrupt. And I think radical politics does as well. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think one of the things we put in that election paper was not left, not right, but forward.
Yeah,
I think that kind of summed up what we were about. And we were a group that was based around the library, so we were always learning and educating each other. And that's, for me, what, you know, in the past, when anarchists would go along to left meetings or union meetings, there'd be a random anarchist in the room, whereas we were about, we'd turn up to left meetings or anti-fascist meetings and we'd turn up as a mob, and we were proud to be anarchists and proud of that kind of radical history that we drew upon, and proud of everything, of our ideas, our politics, and the direct action and confrontation with the state and the authorities. That was how we win, basically. That's what we were really proud about, which was lovely, I think.
I feel like I'm kind of... We failed. We didn't change the world.
We did,
but
yeah,
we had a roll of the dice.
Yeah.
Like, we said, like, the world needs to be changed, and we had a roll of the dice. And I think we tried. And just because it didn't work isn't necessarily the bad thing. Like, I mean, yeah, I'd just like to add to that as well. Tonight, me and you have come here just to have a bit of a frank talk about a part of our lives that was very special. We haven't got consent from anyone. Like, some of the facts will be twisted and wrong. Like, some of it will
definitely
be outright lies.
Definitely, yeah, yeah.
And some people will disagree. And I think, yeah, there's other people which have their own experiences of it. Like, they went through things differently in different ways. Like, but it's up for those people to talk. I don't want to return from it. I'm glad I'm out. Like, I
well,
had a
yeah,
good time,
we decided to.
Is moved.
I mean, the great thing about WAG, I know we're kind of running out of time a bit, and there's a massive part of, you know, a year or two to another year to fill in, really, of anti-fascist stuff and a lot of things that we did.
The anti-EDL protests.
Yeah, the anti-EDL, like, lots of great stuff that we involved in. And but really, in the end, when it got to kind of early 2011, I think it was the student riots of like December 2010.
Little family attacked in the streets. Like,
yeah,
you know,
the change politically in the country, and us as a group, people were drifting lots, and we felt that actually trying to maintain this group wasn't working. And I think we made that bold decision to end it. And because I think in activist groups, the reason the paper drags up and says Reclaim the Streets are to blame, or Wombles are to blame, or this group or that group are, is because groups don't always call things, you know, wrap it up. They kind of drag out. So the thing about WAG is we drew a line under it. So, and that was great. That, again, we'd built up, we'd annoyed so many people on both the left, the right, in the media, lots of other activists hated us, that we never kind of, we close our own curtain and we set our own agenda. And that, for me, was the great thing about it.
I think that's pretty much all. We've got 30 seconds to wind out. It's been Resonance 104.4 FM, The Circle Day. See you later.
Through the best of times, through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush. Do you remember 36? We went our separate ways. You fought for Stalin. I fought for freedom. You believe in authority. I believe in myself.
You're listening to Lost.